الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين
الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين واللعنة على أعدائهم أجمعين. We were talking about the obstacles in mawane in marriage. There was a red marker here, I don't know, there it is, and the eraser. I think let's put some sign here and no one should take this mark. Okay, so we discussed the mawane of zawaj. اینجا یه علامتی هم بزن کسی لطفا بر ندارد که هنگ This is what we already discussed, and we talked about those mawane and obstacles, and today we move forward to the next step. After the obstacles are removed, the next step is naturally the tahqiq, which everyone starts his search and research. Let's put it research. Research can be mustaqim and ghair mustaqim, that means direct and indirect research. Both are ja'iz and permitted in Islam about marriage. And so, in the indirect research, even though you may end up, Waalaikum Salaam Rahmatullah, in discovering the uyub and faults, is there a new marker here? Thank you. So even if we end up discovering the faults, so basically, when we are talking about researching with indirect research, it obviously means that you will ask the family members, relatives, friends, acquaintances of the person, and each one of the two are allowed, like the girl and the boy are allowed in Islam to do the indirect research. They may end up discovering the faults. When you are inquiring from the family members or the friends, they are also not supposed to hide the faults of each other. Ghibat has those 13, 14 exceptions where ghibat and backbiting is jaiz and allowed in Islam. And one of those is the marriage. That's what we are talking about here. Inshallah, we can talk about ghibat also, which is very important. But you're one of those exceptions is the marriage thing, and that's where it is. So ghibat is allowed. If somebody asks you about somebody and this person is trying to marry that somebody, you are perfectly allowed to mention the faults of that person. This is not haram. Those of the faults which are related to marriage, not those of the faults which have nothing to do with marriage. Let's be clear about this little thing. Well, somebody let's suppose got 0 out of 100 in his or her mathematics exam. Nothing to do with me marrying him or her or not.
But let's,
you know, it's a fault of the person, you know, but it's...
I don't know if it's a habit, but here's the complication. So, for example, if somebody comes and asks me an inquiry about somebody, in my opinion, the person is dumb. I think it's an ab, it's immature.
Yeah, it's an ab.
But that's a subjective...
Yeah, if you think...
Versus somebody who drinks, which is very objective.
Well, that is, of course, haram.
Yeah, but I'm saying that the ab, that is very objective, right? To somebody...
Well, this is related to marriage, because if a person is dumb, you know, if a person is dumb, this is something which we deal every day in our life, in our interactions with each other. So, this is one of the uyub which he has the right to discover. So, that's not a problem.
So, but he may think that the person is not dumb. Sure. That's why it's saying that it's a subject.
Well, difference of distinguishing whether it falls or not, it's left up to you, the mukallaf.
Subjectivity is allowed in that.
Yeah, because you are the mukallaf, you are the one who is obliged to distinguish and do the tashkhis. If in the best of your tashkhis and determination, you think that this fault is related to the marriage and marital life of a person, you have every right to say. So, discovering on the behalf of a person who is trying to marry is also allowed. Telling the faults from behalf of the person asked is also allowed. Both ways it's allowed in Islam, telling the faults. Discovering, usually the initial ruling, Hukm-e Awwali says, لَا تَجَسَّسُوا, this is the verse, part of the verse of Holy Quran. La tajassasu. Don't do tajassus. Tajassus and spying on somebody is not allowed in Islam. Spying is not allowed in Islam. So, when we spy, you know, against each other, when we spy against each other, do tajassus, dumbale uyube digaran raftan, khoj lagana, hum urdu mein kehte hain khoj lagana uyub ka, you know, this is not allowed in Islam. You know, tatabbu al awrat, in Arabic we also call it tatabbu al awrat, that means searching about the hidden secrets of the people is haram in Islam. But when it comes to the marriage and you are researching indirectly, you have the right to discuss and discover all those things and ask those all those things which may initially fall in the category of tajassus and tatabbu. But if it is related to marriage, you are allowed to discover and ask, and the person whom you are asking is allowed to tell. From both ways, it's jaiz. Likewise, telling the faults of other falls in the category of ghibat. But again, like I said, it is mustasna and permitted, allowed. So, and then we have the direct research and tahqeeq about a person. You directly, you want to research. Direct research means A wants to marry B.
A is trying to marry B.
So A has a right to directly talk to B or go to B and ask. And B also doesn't have the right to hide. You have to tell. I mean, sometimes people don't tell, but Islamically speaking, they don't have the right to hide. Things which are related to marriage should be told.
So if it does hide, does that void the contract of marriage?
Yeah, we will come to those points, inshallah, after a little while. We'll come to those points which we call, uyub, those uyub which cause the faskhul aqd. In Sharia, we have certain uyub related to women and certain uyub related to a man. If one of those few were found soon after you married, and the person did not disclose it to you, that means hide it from you, soon after the marriage you have the right of fasakh, which means cancellation. Without needing, you don't stand in need of talaq. You can just say, I do the fasakh of this nikah. That's it. You cancel the nikah. You don't need the talaq. But this right of yours, we will discuss it when we reach the marriage after the tahqiqat, when we go for marriage, then we will discuss all these things in detail. How you have to handle it and for how long you have the right of fasq. Not just you do the fasq after 3 days of marriage. No, it's not going to happen. So there are certain limitations that applies. We will discuss it. We are arriving to that point soon, inshallah. Oh yeah, both. Both have the right of fasakh. So, coming back to the research, doing research about marriage, research about the person whom you are trying to marry directly, which means A is trying to marry B. A has the right to directly talk or meet B, and vice versa. B has the right to directly talk to A and ask A about the uyub and faults. And no one should hide. No one has a right to hide his or her own uyub, which are, again, those of the faults which are related to marriage. Not all the faults of the whole personality. That's not what we are talking about. Those faults which are related to marriage and marital life. So, tahqiq and research is allowed. And when direct research is going on, A is directly talking to B, then of course in that case Islam says that there should be there shouldn't be anything that leads you towards haram. There shouldn't be any talk that involves shahwat during your discussion. Talking somebody with lust and shahwat is haram. There should not be touching each other, of course, which is haram. And there shouldn't be any like looking at each other, nazar-e haram, looking at each other with shahwat and lust. All these things should be avoided when you are doing the tahqiq and research. So there should be no involvement of any haram. And these are the few examples when you are doing the research. This is one thing. Another thing which is permitted in the Sharia is that when you are doing the direct research, Islam permits
they can see the photograph of each other, and they can even see each other directly, live also, it's permitted. Of course, not without looking at each other with shahwat is not allowed. Of course, we already said that. But otherwise, just looking at each other is permissible, and seeing the photographs is also permissible without the hijab. But no one is allowed to look at each other with shahwat and lust. When you are talking about looking at each other, we should also remember that, like I said, no one should look with shahwat and lust. Second of all, looking is permissible without the shahwat and lust. Second of all, looking is permissible if your marriage depends on this. If your decision depends on this, that means you have already discussed all the rest of the things which you want to discuss. Now your final decision depends on seeing the person. Then it's allowed, because your decision now depends on this, looking at the person. So if everything else is settled and this is the final thing and your decision depends on this, it's allowed for you to see. And no, without shower, that's already said. But see the person without.
So that's the last stage.
Yeah, that's the last stage. And third of all, it's there should be no obstacle at the time you are talking and seeing the person. There should be no obstacle. Or what do we mean by that? That means if you are looking, trying to marry a woman who is about to take divorce from her husband, then this is not what Islam allows you to go and start looking her photograph. She is married right now. You don't have the right to do that. Once he gets the divorce, and once the iddat waiting period expires, which is 3 menstrual cycles in the case of talaq, then after that you would be allowed to have a look, because now there is an obstacle. With the obstacle we mean if a person is married or if a person is in the iddat, the waiting period, this is an obstacle. So anything which is an obstacle, which stops you from marriage, should not be there. I mean, marriage should be possible between A and B. That's where we are talking about. So these are the three things that we need to take care. Okay, so this is about the tahqiq and research. So after the tahqiq and research, keeping these regulations in mind, we would now move forward to the next step is khutba. In Farsi they say namzadi. In Urdu we say mangni. Engagement. That's the next step. After the obstacles were removed, tahqiq and research, we just discussed the details of how much are the limits, how much we can research, how much we cannot research. We are done with that. Now we go to the next stage, khitbah, which means engagement. So now you give the proposal to somebody. Officially, you go and express your consent that you would like to go ahead with this plan. engagement is not a is not something which is Islamically causing anything for you. That means you won't become mahram just because you are engaged with somebody. So it's not a legal thing in Islam. It doesn't bring mahramiyat for you. So if you are engaged with somebody, it means nothing in Islam. That doesn't bring make the person mahram at all. Yeah, we are coming to that. So engagement is not an Islamic thing. We should be clear. So it does not make a person mahram. It does not cause any change because of engagement. Nothing happens Islamically. I mean, nothing happens. He or she is still non-mahram. They can still go ahead and marry anybody anytime without asking you, because engagement is nothing. You know, engagement is nothing. It's just that they discussed something with each other, but fine, they discussed. There's no commitment. There's no Islamic commitment yet. And there's no Islamic relation established yet. Unless if they end up doing the temporary marriage, which is one of the ways, one of the good things that some religious people do. Well, it's up to basically, it's up to both the parties, but basically this is one of the ways, temporary marriage, which can be done. And if there is a temporary marriage taking place, then the persons will become mahram towards each other. But we should remember that temporary marriage in Islam cannot happen without the consent of the wali, which is the father or the paternal grandfather of a virgin girl. So temporary marriage requires the izn of wali. Without the permission, prior permission of wali, it's not going to happen. It's not right. So you did engagement, let's suppose, with someone. That means nothing Islamically, unless you end up doing temporary marriage, but that has to be done with the permission of the wali. And wali, the in charge, is the father or the paternal grandfather. Wali is not the mother, and wali is not the elder brother or the younger brother or elder sister or the uncle or aunt, nobody. Neither the maternal grandfather and grandparents have any walayat or authority over the virgin daughter. If the girl is not virgin, then let's suppose she is a widow or she is a divorcee, then she can marry on her own without asking anybody, because she is not a virgin. Yeah, if the father and paternal grandfather are no longer there, then basically no one is the wali of this girl. Now the next step is that we will see whether she has the rushdun akli. That means she is aqila and baligha. And rashida in her aql. She's grown up in her intellectually grown up person or not. Rushd aqli has to be judged. If she has the rushd aqli, that she can determine what is right for her and what is wrong for her. Maslihat and mafsida, what is good and what is bad. If she can determine that, then she can do her marriage on her own. But if, let's suppose somebody doesn't have those three attributes, bulugh and aql and rushd are missing, then this kind of people who miss those attributes, then basically waliul faqih Islamic leader has the walayat, jam al shara'i, hakim al shar. He's the hakim al shar. He's the ruler, has the walayat over all those such people who fall in this category. He is the waris, al imamu warisu man la warisa lah. Imam al Muslimin, the leader of the Muslim Ummah, is warisu man la warisa lah. He is the waris and inheritor of someone who has no inheritor. All those children who are, you know, we call them al-ghuyyab wal-qussar in our fiqh. Al-ghuyyab wal-qussar. So, those people who, somebody passed away, somebody died in an accident, somebody passed away, he has no relative. Somebody is there, he doesn't have rushd and aql. Somebody is insane. Somebody is majnoon. Somebody has no waris. Children who have no one to take care of. All these fall in the category of ghuyyab and qussar people. And it's this walayat of faqih is muttafaqun alayh. Among all the maraja in the entire history of Shia fiqh. That's what I always say when somebody asked about the walayat of faqih. I always say that there is no difference between any mujtahid, and I'm challenging this to everyone, that there is no difference between any mujtahid about the walayat of faqih. Without exception, every single mujtahid, even those mullahs who are taghutis, even those mujtahid like Shariat Madari, whom Shah had linked with him, even the taghuti people, you find there is no dispute about the walayat of faqih. What do I mean with this statement? What I mean is that aslul walaya, asle walayat faqih, that means the right of walayat and rule given to the jama'u shara'it faqih in the time of ghaibat is muttafaq alayh, is a matter of consensus among all the mujtahids. So this, you ask any mujtahid in the planet earth, that does the mujtahid who is jama'u shara'it, does he have the right of over ghuyyab and qussar and all those categories of people which I just mentioned to you or not? And you will find every single mujtahid will say yes. Yes, the ikhtilaf in our history of marji'iyyat was about madal ikhtiyarat, the extent of authorities. How much authorities does the mujtahid have to exercise? This is controversial. This has been controversial and it is still controversial among the mujtahideen. How many authorities to exercise? 10,000 authorities, 15,000, 15,600, 15,900, no, 15,902. How many rights to exercise? No, things that they can do. That was controversial, but not the asle walayat. The rule or right of rule itself is there for him. If not for him, then who else? We cannot go to Tawud. Quran is stopping us from going to Tawud. The other option is not doable. That's not on the table. What other option we have? We go do nothing? Doesn't make any sense. So no mujtahid on the planet earth can deny the walayat of faqih. So that's what Imam Khomeini Ridwanullah Alayhi used to say, to some people, that you say that, well, in the ghuyyab and qussar and man la warisa lahu, and those who don't have rushd aqli, those who are not aqil, they are majnoon, and all of you agree that the walayat is there, the right of rule is there. Okay, what? So Allah does not agree at any cost that the majnoon people, we need to take care of them at every cost. What about the aqil people? How many majnoon we have in the world? Less than 1% people are majnoon. Isn't that right? Much less than 1%. So Allah is Allah loves to take care of the less than 1% of the humankind. But what about the rest of 99% plus people? Allah doesn't like to take care of them. Who is going to take care of them? The taghut?
doesn't make any sense to just leave them without a sarparast and without a caretaker.
Well, yeah, so let's not go far away, but basically, yes, waliul faqih, it has the walayat in the case, or he will appoint, or his wakil, wakala, who have walayat regarding these things in umur al-hisbiya. We call them al-umur al-hisbiya in the fiqh. Al-umur al-hisbiya. So, Jam al-Sharaid Mujtahid will himself deal or will give the wakala to some scholars in different areas regarding the umur al-hisbiya, and then they will be empowered to take care of such cases. Okay, so what we were talking about is that temporary marriage is one of the ways of in this step of engagement, and engagements means nothing Islamically unless you have a legal, Islamically legal relationship which requires the izn and prior permission of the wali, and these two are the wali. Otherwise, if you don't have the temporary marriage, then engagement is nothing. It's just a custom, you can say it's a tradition. Okay, let's pray then, inshallah. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina Muhammadin wa alihi at-tahirin.